Welcome to the realm of magic and mystery, classic horror and sci-fi. You are now entering the House of the Unusual podcast with your hosts, Eddie and Joe.
Welcome, everybody, to the House of the Unusual program, where each and every week we come and meet with the strange and unusual. We bring you the best from around the world. Chuck, this week I was laughing because I had seen that you went on TikTok, and I noticed one thing that's unusual, Chuck. When you go on TikTok and something happens, your hits, my God, you hit 11,000 plus hits overnight. Yeah. And what we're talking about is Chuck made a pigeon appear. But not only did Chuck made a pigeon appeared, the pigeon wanted to join the magic show, and he decided to poop at the end. So he made a poop appear. So that's double magic, Chuck. Tell me a little bit about it, Chuck.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened, Eddie. I was, you know what, Shiri was filming me, and I had a scarf around my neck, and I had a circular ring, which is a standard magic item, and I twisted the ring and it changed to three triangles. Then I put those down and I grabbed the scarf and I blotted my forehead and I bunched it up and I made a dove appear. And I thought that was the end of it. The dove perched on my finger. He flapped his wings and I said, "Thanks for stopping by, guys." And little did I know is he took a poop, and people called that out immediately. I mean, there were so many comments.
Yeah.
I said, the dove pooped. He pooped. And it just kept getting hit after hit. Within one day, it went up to like 8,000 views. Now it's up to, like you said, close to like 1,100, maybe 1,200. It's crazy.
No, 11,000. You're saying 1,200.
11, oh, yeah, 11,000. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me tell you, Chuck, the whole thing is that I noticed that in social media, especially when even my mom was saying this, if you want to become famous, you have to do something in social media that's just different. Like right now, how many magicians have a dove that poops? Doesn't happen a lot, but it costs, and that's a good thing, because now with all the books we're publishing, you automatically did a review of the four books, actually, and that thing has got over 1,000 hits, and that was from like yesterday.
Yeah, that's actually doing very, very well. And I explained to them, you know, that the books are available in paperback and hardcover. And our latest book, the Chrono Shadow Initiative, is absolutely fantastic. I mean, you folks, if you're interested in UFOs or anything with UFOs, Eddie did a lot of research. He talked to a few scientists with us. Fantastic job, Eddie. He actually connects the German bell to the Kecksburg incident, which happened about 25 years later, where the Kecksburg bell, it strongly resembled the German Nazi bell. So, and that is a major theory that it propelled 25 years into the future. And my wife and I have been to Kecksburg, and we mentioned this on a few other podcasts. It's about 45 minutes away from us. We're just outside of Pittsburgh, east of Pittsburgh, near Monroeville. Kecksburg is about 45 minutes east of us from here, and it's in the middle of nowhere. I mean, the fire department holds a festival every year. Stan Gordon is there. He's one of the investigators, just not into UFOs, but Bigfoot and all other unexplained phenomena. And there's a big fiberglass mock-up of the actual acorn that was given by Unsolved Mysteries in 1980. They had done a story about the Kecksburg incident, and they built this craft out of fiberglass. And when they were done with it, from my understanding, they asked the borough, would you folks like to have this? And so they said, yeah. So it's on display. So if you ever go there, check it out. You can take pictures in front of it. It's really a cool place to go. But this book covers Men in Black, Nikola Tesla, Einstein. I mean, everything imaginable about UFOs. I wish I would have had this available 30 years ago, Eddie.
Well, actually, I was going to say, Chuck, I don't have the book in front of me because I don't have any copies right now. But I will tell you one thing, and this is really exciting about this book. The first book is basically tells you every theory that's available about time travel. So it basically goes through the steps of what Einstein said, Nikola Tesla, the different scientists out there. It goes into where Michio Kaku says about the string theories. Right. It does all that. But then the second chapter of the book delves into what is time travel? Is it possible? And it tells you all the scientific facts that we have about time travel. So the difference between the two chapters is the first one tells you what scientists said about time travel. The second half tells you what time travel is and what we know about it.
Right.
Now, the third chapter, which is the largest chapter, is really the size of about 2 to 3 chapters, visits each and every incident from the Philadelphia experiment, the Roswell crash, the other Roswell, which is, you know, a lot of people are not aware of it, but there was another crash that some guy claimed that happened in the border of New Mexico and Texas or something like that. I don't remember exactly, but they call that the other Roswell. Then we go into details about the different things, like, for example, the Nazi bell. We try to put in where, as you said, Chuck, and the story, some people are not aware of it, is in 1965, they saw a big fireball over several states, and that's what's called the Ketchper incident. Then some guy, I forget who it was, actually went into the area. There's a lot of things that happened. It was roped off, the area in Ketchburg, PA. They say that they show some type of, you know, acorn craft that was taken away. In the book, there's actually some copies of a website that was taken down right a few years ago. No one knows why, but the guy was like one of the actual people that saw what happened there. I'm saying like that because I'm not going to divulge the whole book. You know, I just want to say as much as I can about it. And we also, there's in that chapter, it also looks into what was called the Battle over Los Angeles. Now, for people that don't know what the Battle over Los Angeles is, you can look it up online. There's been many books written about it. It was a time back in the day, and I think it was in 1942, where the horns, the sirens went off in Los Angeles, and the government, whatever was there, they started shooting into the air. Over 3,000 rounds of ammunition were shot into the air. And you could see in the light from the original photograph what looks like a flying saucer.
Yeah, that's a cool photo. I love that photo. Wow.
Well, that photo's got, it's got in the book, you could see an imitation of the photo,
right?
A mock-up, and you could see the actual photograph from that day. And that's called The Battle over Los Angeles. The book looks into that. And then it, you know, the last two chapters are phenomenal. It takes the studies of the scientists that we use, the two individuals, and you know, we have what we came up with, the conclusion for most of everything that we spoke about. The book is 156 pages, Chuck, or 168?
I think it's, yeah, about 158, if I'm not mistaken, just slightly under 160.
Yes, something like that. The book is really nice. If you want a great copy, you can get the hardcover. I mean, I recommend the soft cover. It's beautiful. The hardcover, for those that like collecting books like me, that I'll have it up in the shelf just to say I have a car. You know, some people don't like, I mean, Kath Kavaraj, my buddy from California, hates hardcovers. He says he only does graphic novels, and they got more popularity than, you know, hardcovers.
Oh, yeah.
I like hardcover books. I know they're harder to open and stuff, but a good example, today I received a book that I placed an order for. I think it was in September of last year.
Wow.
And it showed up today from Amazon, and it's a book that has the front covers of almost, I think, all the Goosebump books that they've written.
Uh-oh.
And you know, I mean, it is a cool book, and I've been waiting it for some time now. I gotta tell you, I don't know if it really covers all the covers, because this book is like 300, 400 pages. And I'm looking at, you know, each two pages is like one entire cover. So I'm just wondering, because it goes on by showing you how each cover was drawn and how the picture until the final image of the cover.
Yeah, they were awesome. You know what? Both of my sons were into, were into Goosebumps about 20 years ago when they were a lot younger. And yeah, the covers really stood out. They were absolutely fantastic. Hey, but there's a couple of things I wanted to mention, Eddie. If you know what, if we get back to the Kecksburg incident, here's the thing that gets me. I mean, this place is really secluded. I mean, it is not easy to actually get to Kecksburg. It's a very rural place, extremely secluded. You know, and you know what? Once this craft, whatever this was, landed, I mean, from my understanding, from what I read, the military got in there, I mean, like within 20 minutes. I mean, it's as if they were tracking this thing or something, because it's so out of the way. If you folks ever are out in this area, and if you visit this place, you will see what I'm talking about. I mean, you will literally need a GPS to actually find the Kecksburg Fire Hall, which is where they have the festival. I mean, so that's what got me. I mean, this is literally in the middle of absolutely nowhere. So just keep that in mind. The other thing I wanted to mention is TikTok. If you would like to see the TikTok videos, what my name is on there is The Dark Magician. So check it out, D-A-R-K, Dark Magician.
And, you know, when you're bringing, now that you mentioned the Kecksburg, I'll bring it out. I wasn't going to say it, but I'll bring out chapter 4 of the book, or chapter 5 actually, delves into where, when you're talking about the Kecksburg, Chuck, and you went there, so you're really aware of the thing a lot more than I am, and you look at the Nazi bell, the similarities were crazy.
Oh, absolutely.
So I started investigating that and, you know, Googling it and doing stuff, and then I spoke to the German scientists about it, and, you know, it was amazing, the similarities. So that chapter delves into, are the two the same thing? You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So Chuck, one question I wanted to ask you. Unsolved Mysteries, you said, built a... Where did they get the idea of what it looked like? Like, where did the acorn shape develop? Like, where yeah. was that? I mean, because yeah. that's the part of the book that you did the research on and stuff, and it's there, but, you know, I kind of just took the writings you sent me and I didn't really, but give me a little rundown on that.
Yeah, from my understanding, it was all the eyewitnesses. Now, we're talking 1965. I was born in 64, so this is 59 years ago, you know.
But yeah. You could have seen it, Chuck. You should have told your parents to take you there.
Yeah. but you know what? So they talked to the eyewitnesses, and they said it was an acorn type of a shape.
It had hieroglyphics.
A form of hieroglyphics, which is what the Nazi bell had, too. It was very, very similar. And so the Germans were definitely experimenting with time travel. In the centrifuge of the Nazi bell was supposed to be mercury, and when it spun at a high rate of speed, it's supposed to open up the doors to for time travel. So that's what the rumor is. That's what the speculation is, anyway. Very, very interesting correlation, you know, because that's the theory that the bell, the Nazi bell, propelled itself 25 years into the future. You know, so, you know, if this is the case, I have no idea. But if that's the case, I mean, who was in there? What was in there? It would have been interesting.
You know, Chuck, when we're talking about that, one of my favorite, and this is favorite because I was watching Pawn Stars about a year ago, and some guy bought in a thing that looked like a TV top antenna, a round wire with something. And he said that it belonged to the Eldridge. So when I saw that, my eyes opened up, and I saw Rick Harris gave him, like, I think it was like $25 for it. And Rick Harris explained the Eldridge, and I said, yeah, that's the one from the Philadelphia experiment. So I went online, and I'm like, I got to see if they're selling it online, because, you know, everything they buy there, they have to resell. Apparently, I couldn't find no information, so I think they either he kept it or whatever it was. But I thought it was so cool to be able to get that. And bringing anything that actually belonged to the... Now, there is... the thing with the Eldridge is that it was apparently sold to, I believe, South Korea. And today is still around, but it's a merchant ship.
Right.
It's no longer a battleship. And first, I think it was owned by Greece, and later it went to South Korea or vice versa. I don't remember this moment, you know, but the ship itself would be phenomenal if you knew where it was and you can, you know, take a picture of what it looks like today. I think that would be a topic for a book.
Oh, absolutely. You know? That definitely would. Hey, there's one thing I wanted to mention, Eddie. Out here in Pittsburgh, there's a strange exhibit that's currently on display here. It's at the Carnegie Science Center, and I would love to see this thing. It's the Titanic exhibit. And so I told my wife to go online and to book a visit there. And this came here to Pittsburgh about 20 years ago. We couldn't make it. Somehow I had a ton of shows all that summer, and our kids were probably 5 and 7. And you know what? We were just so busy, so we couldn't see it. And so I did miss it. But now it's supposed to be bigger and better than ever. So you know what? I'm looking forward to maybe in March seeing this. And, you know, I'm obsessed with the Titanic. I think it happened April 15th, 1912, if I'm not mistaken. So they have a lot of the artifacts. They have what the bedrooms looked like. They had rebuilt the bedrooms, the quarters, you know, the different quarters inside. It's supposed to be a really cool exhibit. So I can't wait to see this thing.
You know, now that you said that, they've had it in New York a couple of times, I remember, Chuck. And they've also had the King Tut this exhibit.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this is crazy because every time it's come there, I always say I'm going to go. And I just hate going into the city. You know what I mean? Even though I grew up there, I hate going there.
Yeah, I'm not. And you know what? I'm not too crazy. Pittsburgh's kind of crazy, too, but nothing like New York. But
yeah.
But it has its own craziness, believe me.
Well, the whole thing is I should have gone because, you know, I could have seen all these famous things that now I'm like, wow, man, especially after we're putting together the book, you know, about the Egyptian pyramids. And, you know, I say to myself, I should have gone. Why haven't I gone? And, you know, the other day I was talking to Jude, our buddy, and he was telling me, Chuck, that he's up, one of his jobs right now is up in Boston. He's going to be there till like March, and he told me I should meet him up there. And I think I'm about to do that because I'm not March actually till May, because he told me about Providence, Rhode Island. And Providence, Rhode Island is about 3.5 hours from where I'm at. And there's a lot of old antique stores there. He actually went to a store in Salem, Massachusetts, that sells old comic novelties and, you know, NECA monsters.
Oh, wow.
Universe. And he was able to get, ready for this?
Yeah.
He got, and this is amazing, he was able to purchase for an unknown price the James Bond racer set, you know, with the little cars from the 60s or 70s they came out.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something that he was, I mean, Sean Connery's on the cover there from, I mean, I like James Bond. I said to him, you know, Jude, you're a little older than me and Chuck, but by about 2 years, but the James Bond I grew up with is Roger Moore. He goes, well, yeah, I grew up with Roger Moore too. I said, you know, when we look, everybody knows the original James Bond is really like from Dr. No, and all that. Sean Connery is phenomenal. In fact, and this bothers me, about 3 years ago, they made a duplicate of the gun that Sean Connery used. I think it was in the, not Dr. No, it was some other gun, that the golden gun. My God, who used the golden gun? Was that Dr. No?
The man with the golden gun, I believe, was...
Roger
Moore and Hervé Villachez from Fantasy Island played it in that one. That was my favorite. I think one of my favorite ones.
You know what? I don't know if that's the gun they duplicated, but they duplicated and put it into a box, and they were selling for $375.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, man, should I order one? And it was kind of cool. So I'm like, you know what? I feel like getting the gun. I didn't, because I didn't want to pay the $375 price, Chuck.
Yeah.
Right now, the darn thing is selling for almost $10,000.
Holy smoke.
I know, and I was like, wow, man. Wow. I could have had a genuine one. A friend of mine had one, and he was trying to sell it, and I was trying to get it for my friend, but then I haven't heard from him in a while. I was trying to get it for Jim, my buddy that goes with me to Chiller all the time, because he loves, you know, James Bond. And he actually, from the movie... it wasn't The Man with the Golden Gun. The one, it's a Sean Connery film.
Mm-hmm.
I think to Russia with love or something like that.
Maybe, yeah.
He actually bought one of the standees from outside the movie theater, an original standee, and I had it in the basement for almost 5 years because I don't know what happened. He bought it in Chiller for several hundred dollars, and I put it in my car, and then it was like, Eddie, I'll get it next week, whatever. It went into the storage. And it stayed there a while. And then I'm finally like, hey, you got to take this, man. It's a huge box, man.
Yeah.
But I gave it to him. But you know, my favorite gun is the one from Dr. Dome. Whoa, you know, the one
absolutely.
That he's, you know, where Sean Connery's holding it to his head.
Yeah, that is true.
The gun, like, you know, that gun is real cool. Yeah. I was actually going to look to see if they ever actually made the real gun. I would love to get that.
Yeah. I loved all the, you know, the Sean Connery movies, like you said. He probably played the best, you know, the 007. He was really talented, but Roger Moore was good too. There was quite a few of them throughout the years. I know Pierce Brosnan, and there's probably about five or six other ones throughout the years. But I did like Sean Connery. He was really
good. What is the name of the new James Bond, his real name?
I'm trying to think. It slips my mind. I can't.
Well, the last one he did, what was it? Not the one that he died in. I thought that was an idiotic. That was stupid. The one before that, I think they also kind of screwed up because the whole scene of the movie is dark. Now, it's funny that we're not forgetting. We're here talking about something. We're forgetting the names of the movies. But I mean, but the whole thing is people know what we're talking about. But the one that I really like is Casino Royale.
Yeah.
The one, I mean, that one is a really good film. Really like this good. Guy, yeah. I think it's one of the best James Bond films ever made. I wish the guy was still making, but I don't get it what they would kill him off at the end. I mean, I thought that was kind of retarded.
I don't understand that either. You know, the thing that always stood out for me, Eddie, was when I was younger, I'd watch it particularly, was all the gadgets. I mean, you know, all the cool inventions that Q would show, you know, James Bond. It was really neat, really cool.
I used to like all the girls that were.
yeah, that was another.
He had some nice, you know, who's one? I mean, I'm sure you know that, but Carolyn Monroe, she was in with Roger Moore in The Spy Who Loved Me. She's the one shooting Roger Moore from the top.
Yeah, you're right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, from the helicopter. A lot of people don't realize that Carolyn Monroe is also the lady who appeared in the Alias Dr. Fibes with Vincent Price.
I love Dr. Fibes. I think I've mentioned that before. Yeah. I still watch both of the movies about twice a year. I pop the DVD in. Fantastic.
You know, Chuck, I said this story to you now. I mean, I don't know if I've ever said it on the podcast, but in 1984, 85, I drove to Florida, and there was, I believe, I don't want to put the location or anything, but there was a wax museum. And the wax museum, I went in, and you know, I was driving down, so I stayed in the town for a little while. And then I saw outside the wax museum, I see a picture of Vincent Price sitting. And the lady said to me, oh yeah, he comes here usually on Wednesdays, or I think he was part owner of the Museum of Wax there.
Wow.
And I regret so much because she told me he's going to be here tomorrow.
Oh my goodness.
And I really had no time to stay. I had to go. My daughter was like 2 years old, the oldest. And I'm like, I really can't. So I was shocked that, I mean, to this day, I look back and I'm like, man, that was stupid. I could have met him in person, you know?
That would have been so cool. Wow.
It would have been, because, I mean, we're here. I've met so many people from mail order. I've met everybody from the creators of the X-ray glasses to Joseph Cosman. Joseph Cosman is the one that he produced the ant farm for the Uncle Milton. Uncle Milton was his uncle. So Joseph Cosman was the nephew, and his company introduced the shrunken heads that were sold in the early 70s.
Right.
The potato gun, the spud gun. And to all you people that would like to know that story, how that happened, there's a book entitled How I Made a Million in Mail Order by Joseph Cosman, the Cosman. And that book, I read it, and then there was a phone number that he said, if anybody want any questions, you can call him. And I was surprised he actually answered the phone. I gave him a call, and I actually called him another two times after that. So I spoke with him, and I said to him, what is the link? I noticed that the stuff you're talking about, I said, you know, isn't that sold by the company called the Uncle Milton Company? And that's when he said, yeah, that's my uncle. And what's your uncle's name? Uncle Milton. And so, you know, he was the Uncle Milton Company, which is still in business today, I believe, is the Joseph Kosman. Now, Joseph Kosman passed away in early 2000, I think it was. Sad, because he was a really nice man. And, you know, there was a lot of mail order companies at the time. And I also met the company that used to, the guy who wrote the book, EC Hip. Hypnotism Made Easy, and which is the other one? It's one called Hypnotism Made Easy, and there's a couple of books, and there Melvin Powers is the guy who wrote them. Oh, now, yeah. Melvin Powers is one of the first people that I used to do mail order with. In other words, his company, which was called the Wilshire Book Company back in the early 80s, they would supply you with catalogs that you would buy, and you would stamp the name of your business on it, whatever, and you would pay wholesale for them, but they would drop ship for you the books. And he had this catalog, which reminded me of one of the early Honor House catalogs that fold out into 22 by 24 inches.
Yeah, those were cool.
Yeah, well, I think he had at least 200 books in this catalog. And one thing I'm going to say to you, Chuck, it was a great thing. I mean, I sent away, I think it was like $30 for 500 of them. I forget how many they gave you. And then all I did was stamp my name and address. I would run ads in magazines. And then when I got them, I would send them out, and people would order books. And I would, you know, keep the difference, and Melvin Powers would drop ship it for me. As a person, though, I gave him an idea one time. I'll never forget. I was running an ad, and the magazine that I was running it in was Entrepreneur, and the ad read, "Name your own mail order secrets revealed," or whatever. I don't want to say exactly how the ad was in case I want to run it one day again. But I told Melvin Powers about it because the magazine rejected it, and I asked him, "What's wrong with the ad?" And then the funny thing about it, he says, "Well, I don't really see anything wrong," but he didn't say much. Then I called Joseph Kosman about a month later, and I found out, and I said, "Joseph, I got a question. This guy," and the reason I called Joseph Kosman, because I wanted to ask him the same question, why my ad wasn't, you know, if he could give me some idea of why the magazine would reject my ad.
Sure.
And at that same time, I was looking through a magazine, and I see that Mr. Melvin Powers ran an ad that said "Mail Order Millionaire Reveal Secret." So he took the exact idea I gave him, which was "Mail Order Secrets Revealed," and he put "Millionaire Mail Order Reveal Secrets," and he ran that ad for the next 5 years.
Wow.
And I know to this day he ripped that off me. So that's the only thing. I wasn't happy about him because he was a multimillionaire. And many books I read about mail order after that by many of the millionaires of mail order mentioned one book in particular mentioned about a guy who he goes, "I know this guy likes to copy." Wow. He was talking about Melvin Powers. I could tell, you know, and I was like, damn, yeah, he did. He ripped me off. But who's going to believe a person who's 18 years old? These are companies that are established.
Right.
And you call up. It's just the same thing. And I'm going to tell a lot of people. This company, the company that invented, called Ally Plastics, they invented the lawn and leaf bag where in Halloween you fill it with leaves as a big pumpkin and a ghost, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, in the 1980s, I contacted that company to see if they could make my 7-foot ghost. And when I told them, the lady, I was with Lou Weiss at the time, and in fact, last week's podcast, if anybody heard it, I introduced Lou Weiss for the first time. He's been on our podcast. And, you know, I haven't talked to him in a few years. Not a few years. I spoke to him like a year ago, but I haven't talked to him in about a year. And I finally got him on the podcast, and we discussed how Fun Factory started, how I took it over, and how, we redid it again. Because Lou Weiss used to run the Fun Factory, and he used to own it back in the 1970s. So it was used to be Honor House, Johnson Smith, Fun Factory. If you look at any book from like 1974, 75, they always have a full page ad for the Fun Factory in Union, New Jersey. Now, what happened is that, you know, we were talking about all that stuff, and you know, and I said to Lou, hey, Lou, you remember the time we did this? All that's, let's just put it this way. If you haven't heard the show, I would recommend you guys to listen to last week's episode. You're going to really like it. And, you know, and it has a lot of stuff to bring. Now, Chuck, we have about 1 minute to go. Any last words you want to say?
Yeah. Hey, thanks everybody out there for tuning in to our podcast. We certainly appreciate it. Pass it along to your friends and relatives. And we're going to continue bringing you the strange, the macabre, and the unusual.
All right. Good night. And God bless everybody.
Okay. God bless. Take care.